I do a glance because it's nice to be a week ahead, right? Do a glance through what's coming up. Like I saw the text about Jesus and his disciples not fasting. I thought, oh, we can look into that. So, title: Not So Fast. Then I dug in this week and was reading through, and sometimes something just grabs you and you need to spend time there. So we'll see how often that happens as we're going through the Bible this year. I suppose it's a good thing to have God's Word grab you in a way that you say, I've got to talk about that. All right. So instead, this morning, we're going to talk about a scene toward the beginning of Matthew chapter 8. In our discussions on Tuesday morning in our class, we were going through Isaiah. Someone had a question about, does God know everything that's going to happen? And we went around and around on ideas of God's knowledge and foreknowledge and free will and all that messy stuff, and ended up in a spot where you can't quite say we figured it out, but we say, okay, we discussed that. But one of the things we talked about is one metaphor that comes up about that is God is kind of like the master chess player who may not force somebody else's move, but he knows the game and the players well enough that he knows what's going to happen, even if there is free will. Well, in the text this week, Jesus comes across someone that surprises him. Somebody does something in a conversation with Jesus that he didn't see coming, it seems. And so even the chess master gets caught off guard. I'm gonna start off by reading this text, and then we can get in a little deeper. This is Matthew chapter 8, starting at verse 5, sometimes called the Faith of the Centurion. This is the second thing that Matthew tells us about after the Sermon on the Mount. And when Jesus entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him, imploring him and saying, Lord, my servant is lying paralyzed at home, fearfully tormented. Jesus said to him, I will come and heal him. But the centurion said, Lord, I am not worthy for you to come under my roof, but just say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I also am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. And I say to this one, go, and he goes. And to another, come, and he comes. And to my slave, do this, and he does it. Now when Jesus heard this, he marveled, and he said to those who were following, truly I say to you, I have not found such great faith with anyone in Israel. I say to you that many will come from east and west and recline at the table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the sons of the kingdom will be cast out into the outer darkness, in that place where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And Jesus said to the centurion, go, it shall be done for you as you have believed. And the servant was healed at that very moment. Now that translation said that Jesus marveled at his response. Other translations say when Jesus heard this, he was astonished. We don't see too many times where Jesus is caught off guard. And in this case, surprised by the faith of this centurion who says, I have this person to be healed. Just say it and it'll happen. That's where the title of calling in healed. I told Rachel, I'm talking about this, and I'm thinking about calling it Jesus phones it in. And she said, maybe that's not the best implication you want to make there. Well, okay, how about calling in healed, play on calling in sick? Good enough. So we have this this scene, which is incredible in its own right, of something that Jesus has done. A lot of times this is pointed out in a series of miracles that Jesus does, where seems to be doing something slightly different each time. And in this case, we say Jesus has power over distance, right? Maybe you've heard that lesson. After this, he's going to have power over nature as calms the storm, and we see his power over sickness and power over demons. And I think there is definitely something to see in what Jesus is able to do in this scene. But as I was reading through here, I came away thinking about that centurion. And how remarkable he seemed, and the way he received such praise from Jesus. Remember, this is rather early on in his ministry. As Matthew tells it, his ministry began toward the end of, or about in the middle of chapter 4, he calls the disciples, he does a few healings, and then we have the Sermon on the Mount, which, even though it's a good chunk of text in our Bibles, it happened probably in an afternoon. And then we have this scene with Jesus and the centurion. So he seems to not be well-known everywhere yet. And yet, this guy's heard something. Now, Luke tells us that the centurion was well-known and well-respected among the Jews. Says that he said that the elders of the Jews were speaking on his behalf. It said that this centurion, who would be a Gentile, of course, loves our nation and has built our synagogue. And it said, this man deserves to have you do this for him. So Luke gives us a little more information about him. But I don't think that's what impresses Jesus. I don't think his background of putting up the money for a synagogue or what the elders of the Jews have to say is what impresses Jesus. And it's not what stands out most to me either. Let's talk about some things that are impressive about this guy. First thing we see is he's not asking for himself. We see a lot of people come to Jesus because they need something for themselves. They need healing. They need something fixed. And I'm sure that this guy had his own personal things that that he had problems with as well. Everyone does. We see other times where, most other times where people come up to Jesus for healing for themselves. And we see other times where someone is asking for help for somebody else, and Jesus kind of questions them. We don't see that here. We don't know exactly the situation with his servant. I guess you could cynically say, well, he wants this guy to get back to work, and so he wants Jesus to help him out. But I don't think that's the case. It seems to be there's something special about this guy, this servant to him. And so for a Gentile to go seek out this Jewish teacher to try to get help for his servant, I think says something about him. He seems to be a rather selfless individual. What else about him? And maybe this is more remarkable. He doesn't ask to see it happen. We see a lot of people coming to Jesus because they've heard things, right? And they want to see things. There are a lot of times that Jesus doesn't seem to trust people because he thinks they only want to see something incredible. He tells them, "You're coming to me because you've seen great signs and you want more." This centurion, even though Jesus says, "I will come with you and do this for you," he says, "I don't need to see it. I'm not coming to get some kind of proof. I'm not coming to get some kind of scoop." He says, "Just please help my servant." He says, "I know you are able." Which leads to the next thing here. And this we'll spend more of our time about. This Gentile centurion, I know I keep hammering that point, and maybe it's too much, but I think it is notable here that here towards the beginning of Jesus' ministry, we have a Gentile who is being singled out for praise and who is being, I guess what we call that, an early adopter, someone who is coming to Jesus very early on. He speaks to Jesus' authority. He says, "You have authority like I have authority. When the people that I have authority over, if I tell them to do something, they're going to do it." Why? Because they have to. He says, "I see the same thing in you." He says, if you say something, if you say that the servant should be healed, it's going to happen." He says, he recognizes mm-hmm. Jesus has authority even over sickness, injury. He's not the first one to notice this. If you remember at the very end of the Sermon on the Mount, the very end of chapter 7, it says, "When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority, not as the teachers of the law." And throughout the Gospels, we see Jesus and others around Jesus talking about his authority. Now, I don't think we talk about it in that way all that often. In fact, you may even catch me earlier on. I was describing some of these things, and I used a different word. A word that we use more often when it comes to what Jesus is doing and able to do. We don't talk about authority as much as we talk about power. Right? Jesus had the power over these things. And I don't know how you think about the difference between power and authority. But in Matthew, and the other gospel writers pick up on it as well, they say he has authority. He certainly has power, but they emphasize the authority. As I see the difference there, power is a capability. Right? Power is a little different than authority, because power means you might be able to do something, but authority says you are authorized to do it. Think about any, or most of any superhero movie that you watch. Right? Spider-Man says, "With great power comes great responsibility," right? Spider-Man has power, and he's being hunted down by the cops. Why? He has no authority. Batman is the Dark Knight, vigilante, great power. This guy has no authority. I'm slipping into nerd mode. We see a lot of times that difference between the strength and capability and power to do something and someone who actually has the authority. Jesus not only has the power, he has authority. They have seen many teachers, many people who are able to do signs, people who are able to do incredible things, to get crowds, who exercise power. They see the other government officials, people who have power. Jesus not only has power, he has authority given by God. He's not doing tricks. When he heals somebody, he's not making a show. He is demonstrating God has given him authority over all things in heaven and earth. I know we try to stay in the text as we're going through our Bible reading plan, but I want to point out at the very end of the book of Matthew, the last thing that Jesus says to his disciples, chapter 28, verse 18. And Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them into the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you, and surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." Again, authority. God has given it to Jesus. He passes it on to his disciples. And somehow, this centurion, not even a part of the story, we've been talking about as we've been going through the Bible, the story that starts in Genesis and moves through, this guy's not a part of the story yet. And he sees something. And Jesus says, "That's what I'm talking about." And he says, this story is not just going to be about bloodlines. It's going to be about the people who understand what God is doing. He said, people from the east and the west, the Greeks and the Romans, if they can be like this man who sees something in Jesus, not just as the miracle worker, not just as the problem solver, but as the one who carries God's authority on earth, those are going to be the ones who take their places at the table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who will be called family even though they were outsiders. And that's us too. Jesus was talking to a lot of people who could trace their ancestry back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's not us. But this interaction with the centurion talks about how they'll be brought in. Why? Not because of some righteous thing that we can do. Not because we're not because of our family, but because we know the right ways to respond. We know what we see when we see Jesus. So I hope we can learn from this centurion. I hope that it might tell us something about how we approach Jesus. How do we come to Jesus in our prayers? Are we looking for things for ourselves? Are we trying to get a sign so that we can feel better about what we believe in? Or are we going to the only one who has not just the power, but the authority to go to the Father for us? I hope you've been enjoying spending the time in these texts. I find it fascinating that how you can go through a book that you've been through before and you say, wow, I didn't remember seeing that. Or you get new thoughts. I hope as we are closing out our first month of this plan to read through the Bible, I hope you are being uplifted in the same way that I'm feeling. Next week, we're going to be looking in one of the Psalms, one of the very old pieces of worship to our God. I hope that we're able to see all the different pieces to this story that come together and have been coming together throughout history. This morning, if you need to respond, if you need to bring your cares or burdens to the one with authority, come share that, and we can lift up prayers along with you. If you're in need of baptism, if you need to say, I want in, we just refilled it this morning. It's fresh. Probably means cold, but it'll still be okay. If there's anything you do this morning, please, we want to hear about it. This is family time. Right. Please share as we say this.
Someday you'll stand at the bar on high. Someday your record you'll see.